Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 11, delivered on February 17, 2016. The title of this lecture is Interest Rate Determination.
Today, interest rate determination. An interesting thing that has happened over the last couple of years. In these classes, I always used to like to show you some bond quotes, just give you some idea of how to read yields to maturity and all that, prices of bonds. And I noticed in the last year or two, you might have even noticed it last time we were together, I was searching frantically on some of the sites that I had already used in the past. It wasn't there. No bond quotes. And then I ran into a document that I didn't know was out there. The SEC has been bitching about the lack of bond quotes for this notice or letter came out from the SEC back in 2014 that the bond quotation services were disappearing. Now, I was still finding them last year, but I mean, it's like now I can't find a place where you can just look at a nice set of bond quotes. I can find, well, I shouldn't say that. I found a couple that are, they're sort of helpful, but the dearth of them is surprising to me. And I might have already mentioned this, but here's the deal. Everyone thinks about stock market, Dow Jones, S&P 500, NASDAQ, all those quotation services, stock prices. The bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. 10 times the size of the stock market. In other words, debt issues are just vastly, debt securities just vastly overwhelm equity securities. But here's the thing about bonds. They are not sexy in the sense that they don't have lots of stories day to day. The bond prices don't whip up and down. There's not that massive volatility and all of that. They don't make news because they just don't have a lot of stories to tell on a given bond quote or on a given company. Which sort of gives you an interesting perspective that our view of investing is sort of tilted toward things that are more exciting and away from things that are kind of, for lack of a better word, more boring. Let me show you. I'm going to show you something here. Bond quotes. Corporate. And I'll go corporate. Now, I can do this in Bing and all that. Watch this, finance bonds. Okay, now, what they're going to show you are treasuries, treasury bonds, not corporate bonds. I just said corporate, so where would they take me to? Yahoo used to have a bond screener that was a broad bond screener. Now, finding corporate bonds is going to be something that is like very difficult to see. One thing I want to point out is whenever you see, and I've said this before, whenever you see a yield, and I'm going to bring this up later, show you a mathematical thing, but whenever you see a yield, that is a 1 year. In other words, this 3 month will not last a year, it will last 3 months and you'll get your $1,000. But it will be quoted as if the bond had lasted a year. All things are annualized. Make sure you know that. Now, these are pathetically small. This is like 0.27%. But it's still better than it was a while back. There is some boost. See, 5 year would be an annualized rate of return of 1.19. And then a 30-year, by the way, there was a long period of time when we didn't even issue 30 years. That was back when we were actually running budget surplus. The government wasn't borrowing money. It certainly wasn't needing 30-year money. But anyway, this is one place that I've got one here, okay? And I'm going to bond online, quote. And here you get a nice little story. Instead of what I wanted, you're going to get a pile of sites for talking about them. Now, the term fixed income, well, I'll be darned. Another site, I asked for bond quotes. Instead, they give me a bunch of, it's more or less just sort of like a link farm. I'm going to find one place. Where can I get bond quotes? I just asked for bond quotes, so I'm going to be told where to get them. Corporate bonds, the online investor, corporate bonds. Well, damn it. Look at this. You see, over and over again, the idea of finding quotes is going to be something that's like pulling teeth out. Corporate bond. Now, FINRA, which is sort of like the clearinghouse, enforcer, all that kind of stuff for trading. Nope, not there. Bond screener, bond quote. Teen analyst? Wait, no, that's a little kinky. Fidelity, NYSE bonds, New York Stock Exchange bonds. Okay, again, you see the frustration here is that even though bonds are, I'm going to do something here real quick. Bond quotes. I'm going to put in WSJ because Wall Street Journal is probably one of the last places where you might find municipal bond. Nope. Wall Street online rates. There's one place where you can find gainers and losers. Nope. Not there. Bond. Corporate. I'm looking for bond. Bond benchmarks. Bond yields. Corporate. Gainers, oh, here's one place that might have a few that are worth looking at. Well, thank God. Found one. Wall Street Journal, as much as I never cared much for the editorial page, they have some excellent resources, although it's been taken over in the last few years by a really nasty man named Rupert Murdoch. But anyway, I want you to look. These are gainers. What is this? These are spreads, but that's not too important for what I want. Well, is that going to tell me anything I really want to know here? Maturity? God. This is quoting, and actually that dollar sign is a very bad thing because that ain't no dollar. That's a quote. So if you were to look, for example, let me find one that looks reasonably sane here. We've got Nabors Industries is at 5%. It's got about 4 years left on it. And the price is $1,098. So what could you tell me? And this is, if you can't, that's why we're doing this. What can you tell me about the yield on this bond? I see that this bond is quoting, or rather the price of it, is $1,098. $1,098. In other words, $109.80 is its quote. Now, knowing that, and this is Nabors, this is the one I'm looking at here. It's offering a 5% coupon. Now, first of all, is this selling at a discount to par or a premium to par, this bond? Okay. You should be able to say that right off. That's why we're doing this. Don't worry about it. It's selling at a premium to par. Anything above 1,000, a quote of 100, that's a premium to par. Anything below 1,000, quoting 100, is selling at a discount to par. This guy is selling at a premium to par, which means that the market is very happy with this bond. It's paying 5%. That would mean that the market thinks that this bond should pay more than 5% or less than 5%. Talk to me. Bingo. Because they're saying, oh, you're giving us candy. You're paying us 5%. We really don't need 5% for the risk of this bond. So you're going to have sellers, or rather traders, buying into this bond, pushing its price above par. And we'll just do this. That one Freeport-McMoRan is just pathetic. I don't even want to, that's almost scary to look at. Some of these are in really bad shape. Let me find something. This is sort of outliers and bizarre. This is sort of like the freak show, some of this stuff is. So let me see if I can find something that's a little bit saner. High yield issues. Okay, this would be a bond that is, in other words, very, it has a very high coupon on it. Now these are on quotes. I can tell these are quoting. Good God, this is like I said, this is like a freak show. Here's ADT, 6.25% coupon. In other words, every year you'll get a check for $62.50. Now, these are definitely quotes. So there's no doubt about it. The ADT, now let me highlight it here, see if I can highlight it here a little bit. Now, you get a little bit easier shot at. Is this one selling at a discount to par or a premium to par?
Discount to par.
Bingo, it's selling as a below 100, a quote of 100. You see that? I thought my eyes were bad. Okay, fine. I see. I'm turning off the house lights and it's not working. The hell, man? You know? Apparently they don't want me to turn off the lights in here. Okay, fine. Let's see if how I... Now you should be... Now can you see it? Good. Is it selling at a discount to par or a premium to par?
It's premium.
It is not. It's selling at a... That, very good. You got it. Yeah. Uh-huh. My man. No. It's selling at a discount. It's below 100. Okay? It's below 100. That's a discount. Or below 1,000. It was kind of weird because those ones at the top were actually prices. These down here are the quotes, which is more typical to see. Now, it's selling at a discount to par. It's offering a coupon of 6.25. So that would mean that the market thinks that it should give more coupon or less coupon. It's selling at a discount. That's right. The market's saying 6.25 is insufficient for the level of risk of this bond right now. Therefore, there's going to be sell-off on it, which will push the price down. And traders are pouring the supply of these on the open market is increasing, so the price is decreasing. Here we see another one. This is 8.625. I'm sorry, 7.875. 7.875, Hub International. It's selling at quite a steep discount to par. Now, usually when I say premium and discount to par for most bonds, that's something, it's nothing major. It's like between 97 and 103, 97 and 102. When you see something that is below 95 or above 105, that's something that catches your attention because that's a punishment. This Hub International is being paddled. It is just being spanked. In other words, that 7.875% coupon, the market's saying, not nearly enough. You're risky, and your risk is commensurate with a much higher coupon. And as you see here, Telecom Italia Capital SA, is that selling at a discount or a premium to par? A premium, a substantial premium to par, which means that Telecom Italia Capital, that coupon, is that too high or too low as a coupon according to the market? Bingo. This is giving a lot of candy, so you're seeing investors saying, hey, this is the kind of bond that I want to buy. And so you're seeing demand surge, price goes up, pushing, and of course that would push, I wish you were showing the yields to maturity. And then you've got Alliance One Capital, Alliance One International, and Consol Energy taking up the rear with punishing discounts to par. These are the kinds, this is pure junk when you see things like that. They're speculative. You could buy one of these and hope to God because you know at the very end date, at the time of maturity, every bond will pay you either $1,000 or if the company has gone tap city, it'll pay you zero. You know that for a fact. So I would buy this bond. It's got 6 years left, 6 years and a month or two, okay? I would buy this $620. If I just sat on this bond, sweating it, on April the 15th of 2022, either I would get $1,000 or I would get nothing. All bonds, either as the time to maturity, no matter how wrong the coupon is, at the point where the bond matures, all that's left is for the company to pay you the face value if it can. So in other words, if I looked at Consol Energy and it were, let's say, April the 12th of 2022, I would see a quote of either 100 or zero. I would see one of those two. So I know this is essentially, this is a lottery ticket. You either win or you lose. And there are speculators, bond speculators, who will, obviously there's someone buying this bond, and it's just pure speculation in a bond market. You would analyze the company. Clearly this company is in severe trouble. It might even be in bankruptcy protection right now, something like that. I would look at it very, I'd have to look at it very carefully, but I would say, okay, well, if I'm a speculator, this is kind of like the ultimate speculation. 6 years from now, I'm either going to get $1,000 for a $620 investment, or I'm going to get nothing for a $620 investment. You follow with me on that? That's how bond markets work. But for the most part, like I said, I'm kind of showing you a freak show here. This is kind of a freak show. I would really wish. This is bond quotes. Investostupedia. Oh, most active. Ooh. Oh, this could be. Oh, these are global markets. Damn it. Just makes my ass itch. I'm trying to find something for you to see that's interesting, and I'm getting nothing. Partner Center. Okay, let me try one more thing. Okay, these are indexes. Stock market and FI data. I asked for markets. No, these are stock indexes, stocks, ETFs. By the way, just a little bit of terminology just to get you up to speed. If you buy single stocks, as I said before, you're stupid. You deserve all of the punishment you're going to get because you're bearing a lot of risk that you don't have to if you have a well-diversified portfolio. The problem with you creating your own well-diversified portfolio is one, doing all the research to find good stocks that aren't perfectly, you want stocks that don't have perfect correlation because then you don't get diversification. But you also have to pay brokers for buying each round lot. You might not even be able to afford 100 shares of 30 different stocks. 30 is like a benchmark for how many makes a decently diversified portfolio. So there are two routes that you can take when you are going for in becoming an investor. Well, there are three routes. You can just let your company do your investing for you and hope to God they aren't Enron. Or there are two routes that are for well-diversified portfolios. One is you can buy mutual funds. Mutual funds, the fund managers are already putting together big wads of stocks, diversifying the portfolio. And you can choose whatever you want. Well, I want an international portfolio, or I want a technology portfolio, or I want, you know, a green portfolio. They set up all kinds of different mutual funds. You can just buy into the mutual fund. Now, the no-loads, you don't pay up front. Don't ever buy a high-load mutual fund. And a lot of your companies, well, if you want to do your own investing, they'll offer you tons of different mutual funds that you can invest in. This university offers me lots of different mutual funds. Okay, now, here's the downside of mutual funds, but it's not really too much of a downside. You can trade and switch mutual funds only a certain number of times a year, say four. So if you really wanted to get out of a mutual fund that you were stuck in, you might be stuck for a while. You can't just trade at will. Technically, you shouldn't be trading at will anyway. Trading just burns up commission, worries you to death. Once you've established your portfolio, all you should do is make sure that from time to time you balance it. In a mutual fund, your fund managers are balancing the portfolios for you all the time. That's their job. That's how they make the big bucks. Okay, that's one route you can do, mutual funds. Upside, diversification. Also an upside, you can get whatever you want as far as your preferences. Well, I like this or that, so I'm going to go with this fund or that fund. I like emerging companies, so I'm going to go with those. You can choose your beta. The mutual funds are going to report to you what beta this like, for example, one mutual fund management house will have tons of different mutual funds. You can just research, okay, I wanted a beta of about 1.2. Go for the mutual funds, find the ones that have 1.2 beta or something about that. They do it all for you. Great stuff. Your alternative to doing mutual funds is to buy ETFs, electronically traded funds. ETFs look and act just like stocks. You can buy a share, 100 shares, 1,000 shares. You can sell it that night. You just call up, you read off the trading symbol of the security, and then you're done. It's just like a stock, except that it is actually an index of stocks. Some place has bought an index. All these stocks of an index. Like, you could buy an ETF that is the Standard & Poor's 500, and if you buy that S&P 500 ETF, you own it, pretty much the S&P 500. Now, here's something that you might already have figured out. Just off the top of your head. Could you afford to buy the Standard & Poor's 500 different stocks of the largest companies in the world? No, you couldn't. Okay. Well, you still can buy the ETF, and it's like you had it. In other words, you have massive portfolio diversification. You've got the 500 different securities in the portfolio, balanced perfectly. The managers watch to make sure that the index stays in its right balance, its mirror. You could buy the Dow Jones and ETF for that. You could buy any index you wanted. You could even buy some narrower ETFs that reflect fewer stocks or rare animals of some kind. The beta is going to be reported right on a screener like Yahoo. You type in the trading symbol of the ETF, and it looks just like any other thing that you, any other stock. They can have dividends, or it can be one of those indexes where they plow the dividends back in to buy more of it for you, which makes the price go up even faster. They are a wonderful vehicle. Their downside is that the upside is you can trade day and night. It's just like a stock. The downside is if you do that, you're paying a trading commission just like you would if you were buying and selling stocks. It's just a stock. So if you decide you're going to buy and sell all the time, you're going to be chewed with commissions for your trades. But you have an awful lot of power. You have more independence so that if you really need to get the hell out, you can. Or if you really, really want to move your securities, move your portfolio to something higher risk or lower risk, you can anytime. So in other words, let me try, see if I can do this. Do you remember what I just said about if you whether you should buy and sell stocks all the time or buy and hold? Which did I say was better? That's right. Because if you do that, for one thing, you're just being silly. You're wasting money. And honestly, buy and hold over a very long period of time is going to beat the hell out of all these trading strategies, day traders, nonsense, and all of that. If you just buy it and hold it, you will win. At least historically, that's how it's always been. In other words, when we had that great crash back in 2008, the stock market went to hell. Well, we had two kinds of people. We had people, investors, who just basically dirtied their diapers and sold out. And then we had investors who just sat there and rode it. Now, those ones that sat there and rode it are up hundreds of percent over where they were before the crash. Those ones who sold out and then they tried to buy back in, they're probably still, most of them haven't even broken even yet, honestly. Because essentially, if they just wasted their time selling out. And that's the whole thing. Don't lose your water. Control yourself. You shouldn't sell just because there's a hurricane down market. You shouldn't buy just because some idiot analyst on TV has told you this is a great buying opportunity. You buy your portfolio, you choose your beta, and you sit there and park on it. And but again, if you're handling your own portfolio, make sure that you have it balanced, because stocks prices can go up and down against each other, which means, and betas can change, which means that you probably want to keep an eye to make sure that you haven't gotten something that has gotten too heavily weighted in the portfolio. As its price goes up, you would probably want to make some adjustments. You don't have to do that too often, but you do have to do it from time to time. However, there is one thing in buy and hold that you will have to do. Yes, sir. I've been teaching for 35 years. I can see you in 30 years. I know what you'll look like. I know everything about you, and it scares the hell out of me that I can see you. In 30 years, you'll be about a 50-year-old man. You'll have a pot belly. You'll be balding on the top, and you also got that receding thing here. And you will have four kids. You will have a heart condition, diabetes. You will, in order to get frisky, you'll need one of those blue pills. You will, too much, but you will have a house, but you will be probably having to buy something a little bigger because at least two of your kids, you know, the one girl, she's like 22 and she found a biker named Nick and she married him. It turned out he had four kids from a previous marriage, and that previous marriage wife, she moved out and she moved in with a biker named Ace somewhere, and you can't find, so you're going to have room for these kids in your house. And then your brother, I mean, his whole life has just gone to hell ever since that arrest for running the meth lab and all that. So, your life has changed there, okay? That would mean that probably your investment goals or your pattern of investment would have to change. That's when you would adjust your portfolio. You, sir, at the age of 65, you are thinking about retirement in about 10 years, so you've got to start preparing for that. You're old, you're grumpy, and you have a kidney leak. Now, what you're going to have to worry about is setting up something that will begin to provide fixed income within a certain number of years. You can't be speculating in stocks anymore. You're no longer wild and crazy. Even though you bought that little sports car hoping that it would actually attract younger women, it didn't. You know why? Because you're old and ugly, just like I am. Trust me, it happens. Deal with it. So here's the deal. You're going to have to adjust your portfolio. You see what I mean? There are times when it is important for you to adjust your portfolio. Right now, you, sir, in that maroon, god-awful maroon jacket with a, you are right now wild and crazy. You're in your prime. You're going to be there for about, 5 to 10 more years. But then you're going to get married. Okay? That's going to be a portfolio adjustment, because if you're responsible, you know that within 2 to 4 years, you're going to start having a family, which means that your investment pattern is going to have to take on less risk. You'll still have risk in your portfolio because you've got to have a decent yield, but you're going to change, okay? So in other words, buy and hold, yes, but there are going to be times in your life when you do want to make pattern adjustments to bring down the beta. In some cases, interestingly enough, there have been times in financial planning where we have told certain investors it's time for you to boost your risk a little bit. Like, for example, couples who had their kids young and the kids are through their growing up years through college. We've got couples in their 40s, early 40s, and we say we should adjust your portfolio, tilt it more away from low-risk stocks because you've got a little window here until you're about 55 when you can be a little more speculative and possibly boost the amount of money that you've got going into your retirement years. We have to be very careful about that, but that can happen. So anyway, the bottom line is buy and hold, but always keep balance and always think about that time when you do need to make a transition. It's just being a responsible investor, being a responsible adult. Go.
So you said that if you're like buying stocks frequently, you got to pay like the brokers every time you sell it?
Every time you buy and sell, you're going to pay something.
So what if you just like buy and hold on to it for like a year or whatever, you don't have to pay the brokers anything?
Once you buy it, you'll pay them to buy it. But then once it's riding there, it will cost you nothing. But remember, if you want to get out of it, it's going to cost you something. So you're kind of stuck in that. With ETFs, you're going to face the fact that any kind of gain that you calculate, you have to take minus the commission on the gain if you actually realize the gain. That's the bad downside. Mutual funds, that's why some people are so attracted to mutual funds. There's no cost when you shift mutual funds. The only problem is you can do that shift only four times a year or something like that. So it's a mixed bag out there. Now, there are these discount brokerage houses. We promise you a commission of $8 on, well, that's nice, but I have run into a lot of people who found out that commission, it seems like it's a low commission, but it's still, if you have achieved a gain, let's say you bought a stock at $5. It goes to, let's say, $7. That's $2 a share for a round lot. That's $200, okay? So what you've done is you have gained $200 on an investment of $500. That's great, but you're still going to pay that $8 commission, and you might even pay more than that. You might be surprised at hidden charges in these kinds of houses. Trust me, I was a part of this world in the early days, and we had all kinds of ways we could get money out of you. We really did. You know, and the other thing is that the reality of it is you look like a very bright man, right? You can handle your own investments. Don't ever think that with a discount broker you're going to call them up and say, what do you think I should do? They're going to just say, can't tell you a thing. We're a cheapo Kmart house. Buy, and good luck to you. Okay? So, in other words, you're not going to get experts helping you. Unlike a mutual fund where you've got the hottest shots God ever made handling that mutual fund. And that ETF, it's already there. And I mean, that's about all there is to it. Okay, now keep that in mind when you're doing this kind of investing. However, notice how I'm talking about, when I talk about bonds, you actually, when you create your portfolio, say you've got a mutual fund. You don't buy one mutual fund oftentimes. What you might do is buy a combination of a couple of mutual funds. One might be a mutual fund that invests in equities. The other might be a mutual fund that invests in bonds. So that in good times, you might balance 70% of your money is in the equity fund, 30% is defensive in the bonds. But if you think the times are going to get bad, then in your window, you would slide over and maybe rebalance 50% equity, 50% bonds. If you think the world is going to hell, you might even shift it a little farther over and go to, let's say, 30% equity, 70% bonds. So that there is that kind of shifting that you can do based upon your assessment of macroeconomics, the macroeconomy. That's one of the powers you have over your average bear. You're students of the College of Business, and you're also students right now of the best professor who ever walked the earth, And so that means that you can do a little bit of thinking for yourself. So now, that takes us to the next point of this lecture. Madam, tell me what you think the economy is going to do over the next 3 years. That will be into the time when you're trying to find a job. What do you think it's going to do? It'll be good. Hope? No, there's no hope. No hope. Don't ever do that, okay? I'm going to tell you a quick little story. I think I've already told this before. Did you ever read Dante's Inferno? I don't even know if they ever read. Okay. Dante told in Inferno about when you go to hell. You'll know all about this. I mean, especially you with that beard. Okay, but you. There's this giant sign over the gates of hell. It says, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter." And, you know, a lot of people read that and they think, well, there's the end of all things. Huh? It's all over. Yep. Going in there. Something strange, though, as you walk under the sign, the gates are open. They're waiting for you, obviously. But you know that sign is not the end of all things? That is your instructions for leaving hell. You have to abandon hope. Give it up. That's not going to get you out of hell. Don't hope. Do. Prepare. Dante was saying, you don't have to be in hell. The gates are open 24/7. You can leave anytime you want as long as you give up hope and instead choose action. That's one of the most important business concepts I have ever heard, and it was from Dante Alighieri hundreds of years ago. Okay? So you tell me, economy going to be good or bad in 2-3 years?
Depends who runs, gets president.
No, Trump, we don't. Depends. Oh, well, I don't know. It'll just be weird, okay? Just weird. Give me your assessment.
I think it's going to go to shit.
Okay. I don't think there's an actual index marker going to shit is at this level, but okay. What would your investment pattern? Would you go equities or bonds?
More bonds.
They're defensive. Remember, from stocks to bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. What did I call that natural movement of investors? If there are bad times ahead, they go from stocks to bonds, from bonds to metals, gold, and from gold to bullets. Do you remember what I called that? Flight to quality. Flight to quality. It is one of my favorite questions in the world to ask on a first exam. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Damn, boy, you did. Okay. What's the link for to it?
I think I just highlighted it.
Oh, you just highlight. Okay.
Flight to quality.
You see, because investors are actually a very skittish lot. If they smell trouble, they're going to pull out of where the trouble can get them the most trouble. And so they're going to move away from equities, which are highly sensitive. They jump, they fall, they rise, they've got the volatility. They will move toward bonds because even if a company gets into terrible trouble, the bondholders will get theirs and the stockholders will get screwed. So the bonds are a safer investment. But if there is really, really bad, bad times, then what you will see is a movement away from even bonds and going toward metal. Because of the belief that metal will survive even the zombie apocalypse, you can buy your can of Spam. I recommend, by the way, the Spam with cheese. And they got one that's bacon flavored now. It is actually excellent. I mean, you boil up some ramen noodles, and then you put some of that Spam in it, and then you fry a couple of eggs, scramble them, and put it. That will give you bowel trouble. Okay, now, where was I? Please stay on point, okay? The point I'm making here is that metals are considered to be, you can at least use it to get something, even if the currency of the country has completely collapsed. But at the point where even metal isn't going to get you what you want, a bullet in a merchant's face is going to make him very receptive to selling you some food, okay? And that's why we say from bonds to stocks, from stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. It's called flight to quality. Now, that's one of the things that you watch for. It's when the stock markets fall, watch the bond market indices. And that's the thing that I want to show you here, if I can get it. By the way, here's some interesting, here's some things. Notice that the interest rates that I talked about before, and this is another thing that I could very well ask you on a first exam. Provide me with two, maybe I'll say three, I could say three benchmark interest rates and explain one of them in detail. Well, you could say, well, there's the federal funds rate, the prime rate, and then you could also say LIBOR. And the prime rate is the average rate that banks charge their best customers. Now, what's happening to the prime rate over the last week? Can you see it? Talk to me. What do you see about the prime rate? Can you see that from clear up? Okay. Let me get someone a little closer. Can you see that prime rate?
3.25.
What is it now? No, it was 350 today. Last means where it was the last time they checked, okay? Last means the last time they checked. In this case, the markets are closed for the day. There shouldn't be any more. So this is the close. The other word for last is closed. Close. And three, it was three, it's 3.5 now, up from 1 week ago where it was 325. So it has gained 25 basis points in just 1 week. That's upward pressure on interest rates. As interest rates go up, what happens? All other things being equal, what happens to the economy as interest rates go up? Okay, let's try this. You were thinking of buying that great new home. Actually, it was a trailer on the east side of Decatur. You would talk to your loan manager, a loan officer, who said he would get you a mortgage at 4.5%. Now you go back there, you're ready to buy it, you propose to your lady, and her eight kids said yes to, so you're all going to move in, but now you go to the loan officer and he says, well, the rate is now 4.75. You hold off, and then you go back and you say, oh, I'm sorry, this week it's 5.6. You stagger away, you go back a week later, well, I'm sorry, now it's 7. What's happening to your ability to buy the house? What happens to companies' cash flow, the present value of future expected cash flows from projects, as the discount rate you apply to them goes up? What happens to present value? Goes down. Therefore, the values of companies, which are essentially nothing but a cash flow stream in the future brought back to the present, the price of stocks will go down. Therefore, what happens to the economy as you see interest rates rising? It shows that there is trouble. It's not horrible. You could look, keep an eye on that yield curve, of course. But at the same time, that is a fairly aggressive rise. Now, money market fund, the money market thing is slipped. But notice mortgage rates, 30-year fixed rate mortgages are now slipping upward, which is going to cause a slowdown. Actually, I should be a little careful about that. When mortgage interest rates start to go up, there tends to be more people getting mortgages than normal when interest rates start going up. We see this strange thing that people actually start going and getting mortgages on homes, buying new builds, buying used homes. pre-owned homes. But why would that be? Why would interest rates going up cause people to start getting more mortgages? Do you know why that is? It's simple, because what that means is that they are speculating that interest rates will go up further, so they lock in. When they start seeing mortgage rates going up, they get their mortgages in, they get it done, they make their decisions earlier than they would have. And so essentially, they kind of lock in for the, in case mortgage rates go up even more. They've gone up 5 basis points so far. 15-year fixed rate mortgages have gone up 5 basis points too. New car loans, interestingly enough, 48-month car loans have gone down slightly. That's not really enough for me to say anything. That's just statistical noise. I would not imagine that they'll go down much further unless the auto industry starts getting some serious trouble, and then they're going to try to start offering all kinds of deals on cars, okay? So there's that for you. Let me pull one other thing up. I wanted to. I'm not going to find what I want here. Anyway, though, okay. Okay, that's enough of that one. Now, let me show you one last thing here. Document camera. I'm going to show you one last thing here about interest rates. I kind of lied to you about something. I said all corporate bonds and all government bonds, they don't pay you any principal. They just pay you the interest until the end, and you get one last interest check, and you get your face value of the bond. There's actually an animal that violates this. It's called a ZCB, a zero coupon bond. They are generally considered to be junk bonds. They had their big heyday back in the late 1990s. There were these financial engineers who were trying to creatively create the conditions by which this new emerging type of company, what was called the dot-com, let's check this out. Sorry, I froze it, and that was it. I left, and I got criticized heavily by the dean. So, anyway. What the hell? Okay. Now, there were these financial engineers at the end of the 1990s. They got a very bad name. They were exposed as the evil corruptors of the universe, dog beaters, nose pickers, child molesters, whatever you want to call them. Among them was a man named Michael Milken. He was essentially, I'll get into that in a minute. But here's the thing. The problem with this new type of emerging company, back at the internet had been around for decades. I was using it when it was called the ARPANET many, many years ago. But then in the early 1990s, very early 1990s, there was this coalition of senators led by one who saw the internet, an internet of everyone's accessible by everyone, as the wave of the future. He went around to other senators, and he got a coalition together that funded a massive upgrade of the telecommunication system of the United States. The senator did. And so, legitimately, the internet, as we know it, was born. It was a Wild West. It didn't have pretty graphics like we have now. But it did have visual interface, which made it so that more normal people could use it, and businesses could ultimately start to use it. That didn't come very fast, though. It was slow in developing. But by the end of the 90s, there were companies that were figuring it out. We can make visually appealing interfaces. We can create the conditions by which e-commerce can occur. and we can do all kinds of other things. Some of the unfortunate leaders in all of this were a couple of entrepreneurs. There was a movie made about them several years ago who figured out a way to scan porn images and post them and charge people with Visa and MasterCard. They made a freaking fortune off it. Well, the question was, how can we foster this industry where the companies would start up, but it would take them years before they'd actually realize any gain, because people and businesses were just slowly beginning to figure out the internet, what it was, back in the late 1990s. People knew, but they had no idea its potential. So we'd have to find a way to fund these companies for a long period of time before investors would see any kind of realize any kind of gain. Well, one thing that we knew for sure was that the traditional investment banking houses were not going to do IPOs on these, or they were going to beat the hell out of them with fees and terms and conditions. So these financial engineers started thinking, how can we creatively do this? One of their creative instruments was called a ZCB. A zero coupon bond. A zero coupon bond. A ZCB. Here's how it would work. An investor would pay a discount price with the promise that he or she would get $1,000 back in, let's say, 7 years or 10 years. You're not going to get anything. You're not going to get a coupon. You're going to get nothing. So if you lend us some money now, this company, $10 million to this .com, in 7 years, this company will pay you $1,000. But you've just got to ride that son of a bitch and hope to God it happens. They are the ultimate discount bond, the ZCBs. They're still around, but this was their heyday, the zero coupon bonds. The leader was one of the chief, as I said, Michael Milken was one of the big architects of these. He was vilified later, unjustly, but it was a question of either you vilify these guys or you vilify the Federal Reserve, which did this deliberately and with malice. But, and you won't hear me say that a lot about scandal people. A lot of them need to burn in hell, like the CEOs of these banks. But this one was one, or another one that was, well, I'll get into that one later in the course. But anyway, okay, here's how it would work. Okay, you would buy a ZCB, and it would be a bidding process. Who's out there going to buy one of these bonds? You'll get $1,000 in 7 years. And it was essentially like an auction. Everyone, this is ridiculous. This is really risky. But there are risk takers. And if you're going to take risk, you should have no pity if you lose your shirt. But anyway, so let's say you bought one of these for $700, and in 7 years, you're going to get $1,000. Pure junk. Don't get me wrong. These are junk bonds. Highly, highly speculative. Highly interest rate sensitive. Remember that maturity premium? It is all over the place. It's wrapped like a big squid around these. And I've seen enough hentai to know exactly where that would go when you got a big octopus squid wrapped around in a security. Okay? So let's talk about what the yield on this would be. Here's how you find out a long yield. You're going to earn $300 on an investment of $1,000. So what you're going to have to do in order to annualize that, in 7 years, you're going to have to take that to the 1/7th power. That's how you do it. You take it to the 1 over the number of years it's going to ride. And then you don't forget to minus 1. Don't forget to minus your 1. Well, let's see what this guy would do. And by the way, this I'm showing you by example how you do this. I'll go back to the PC here, screen here, and let's see if I can find a calculator. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take 1 plus 300 divided by, whoops, I didn't do that, 700. You invested 700, not 1,000. I am sorry about that. Bitch at you for doing that, and then I go and do it. Divided by 700, close the parentheses, and now you're going to raise that to the 1 divided by 7. And then you're going to subtract the 1. My ass. How did I do that wrong? What the hell? 1 plus, well, let's do it this. 1 plus 300 divided by 700 equals, raise that to the 1/7th power, close the parentheses, minus 1. 5.23% is your annualized yield. That's not a very high yield. I should have done that a little more realistically. Realistically, you probably would have, the bond market would have done about $500 for it. But anyway, let me switch back over here just for a moment. Seriously? There. Okay. The problem was that this was happening at the same time that our stock market was skyrocketing, just going through the roof. The Federal Reserve Chairman at the time, Alan Greenspan, kept going to Congress and saying, this can't happen. This is irrational exuberance. This is a bubble. That word bubble came from that time. It's one of the stupidest ass terms on earth. But he kept swearing, it's going to go to hell. It's going to go to hell. And then, as the 21st century dawned, he joined the chorus that said, we're going into a major recession. We must have massive, the longest, deepest tax cuts in history. And I must also raise interest rates to stop this irrational exuberance of the stock market. The discount rate kept going up. The Federal Reserve kept executing open market operations to claw money out of the federal funds market. Interest rates started pushing upward and upward, which fed the appearance that we would go into a recession, which fueled the screams for a massive, insane tax cut right on the verge of two theater wars. But interest rates going up, what that did to these zero coupon bonds is it just collapsed them because they are so interest rate sensitive. Okay, I'm going to show you why that's the case, and I need you, sir, I need you to join me up here. Okay, you are a one-year Treasury instrument. Take my arm like this. Okay. Dude, do you even lift? Okay, now, your face is beet red. That's 1 year. Now, grab my hand. Now, lean back. This is 7 years. See how whipsaw it is? Where have your hands been? Go, sit. That length of time, any interest rate change has so much greater effect out there than it does on short instruments. And when there's no intervening coupons to soften the blow, zero coupon bonds just went to hell. They just went boom like that. The dot-com industry fell into hell. It just died. all those investors got screwed, and then the federal government came in like knights riding to the rescue. Ha ha! You bad people! You made these! You created these! They sent Michael Milken and a bunch of others to prison for years for the actions of the Federal Reserve in bringing up interest rates because they couldn't stand the fact that the stock market kept going up and up and budget deficits had disappeared. The Federal Reserve didn't have any control over the economy because there weren't any treasury bills for them to execute open market operations. Yes. So there's a political side to this. These are junk bonds because they're interest rate sensitive. If you think that interest rates are going to do some wild thing during the life of the bond, you better watch it. Get out of them. But if you think interest rates are going to be stable over the life of a ZCB, they're actually a very interesting investment. That doesn't mean you should do one right now. Wait until you've got enough money. Because the stock market, remember, is the best place where you can turn a small fortune into an even smaller fortune. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.